Thank you very much, Nico. So I'd like to start by thanking the organizers for giving me a chance to say something at this very nice workshop. So the topic today is sort of absence and existence of arbitrage in one-dimensional diffusion models, and this is joint work with Misha Urusov, who is currently in Ulm. All right. So the structure of the talk, broadly, more or less, two parts. The first part, I will sort of describe things that remind you of things that you know about NFLVR and other kinds of arbitrage concepts that have been invented over the years to deal with the question of, existence of arbitrage in different kinds of models. And I will define these things. So NFLVR, of course, naturally lives in the sort of very general setting of semi-martingales and NGA, so no generalized arbitrage lives in a sort of is defined for non-negative semi-martingales, and as you will see, or perhaps you've seen already, this relative arbitrage sort of naturally lives in the setting of Ito processes. So that will be sort of the first part. I will recount the definitions and sort of pick out the relevant bits that will hopefully come to life in the second part of the talk, where the goal is somehow to characterize these notions of arbitrage in terms of some deterministic object in the special case of one-dimensional diffusion models. Okay, so you take one-dimensional diffusion models, these are sort of quite concrete, and you can ask yourself whether arbitrage of these various kinds exists in these models. And of course, these diffusion models will be set up in such a way so they fall into all these categories that I mentioned earlier to do with where these arbitrage concepts are defined. Okay, so let's start with sort of the well-known classical thing first, right? Important thing. So free lunch with vanishing risk. So everybody knows about this. I mean, it's a classical concept, and sort of pricing models in theory and practice are all measured against it. I mean, you don't want to have free lunch with vanishing risk in your model, right? So what is it? Let me quickly go through what these things are, what these things mean. As I said earlier, it's the semi-martingale setting, right? So I take a discounted asset price process to be a general semi-martingale on finite or an infinite time horizon. And so that's my market, those are my assets. And then if I want to talk about arbitrage, I really need to tell you what the sort of portfolios that I can conjure up within this market are, right? And how are these defined? They're defined by admissible trading strategy. So what's an admissible trading strategy? It's just a predictable process H on the same probability space, such that it's discounted wealth process is bounded from below by some constant that depends on age, of course, uniformly throughout the life of this hedge or this portfolio. Now, so there are two conditions in this, right? So one is predictability, and so we want this process H to be predictable. Why do we want it to be predictable? From the mathematical point of view, of course, we need it to be predictable so that we can form this stochastic integral, right? We're integrating against general semi-martingale, right? So we sort of need predictable integrals to define the concept of an integral. But from the economic point of view, of course, the thing is also very, very sensible, because if I want this model to be sort of in any way a realistic model of what actually happens in the market, I need to decide whether to trade or not before the thing jumps, right? And that is predictability. So there's no sort of controversy there. The other constraint of it being bounded below by a fixed constant comes into the picture, of course, for reasons of, as you all know, I mean, reasons of so these doubling strategies, right? Strategies that produce almost sure gain by allowing unbounded risk. So you want to exclude it. That's not a good idea. You want to exclude it. Right? But this also has some other less pleasant ramifications. Like, for example, of course, this is known, but and this is something I'll come back to this later on in the talk, so I'll just mention it now. You know, if you take a very simple case, and this is general semi-martingale LS, but let's take a Black-Scholes model, geometric Brownian notion, right? So this is unbounded from above, of course. And in that model, strategy H, which is equal to -1, is not admissible, of course, because geometric Brownian motion is unbounded from above. I can't sell it at time zero. I can't short the stock and hold on to it. This is not an admissible strategy. That's not a, you know, and maybe one would like to incorporate this in the sort of all the admissible strategies that one deals with. But in any case, this definition excludes that. Another thing which is sort of very popular and has come up in this conference also many times is, you know, if you take, for example, people like geometric Levy models, yeah? And if the levy measure is such that it has unbounded support on the positive real line, otherwise you allow arbitrarily high jumps, then this admissibility condition implies that the admissible trading strategy is non-negative almost everywhere. Okay, so you can't short at all. It's kind of strange if you want to hedge a put. But in any case, so these are the questions that sort of people try to address, introducing why they, sort of the reason why some of other conditions, no arbitrage conditions, have been introduced. Okay, so that's that. Now, let's leave that aside for a moment. So this counted well process, of course, given by this stochastic integral. You see, this H dot S is simply what I can manufacture by from zero well. Right? And now, when does the model S, the same, I think, LS, have satisfy NFLVR? Right? That's the question. And the classical definition is, well, if and only by definition, if these two cones, you see, this cone and this cone, have trivial intersection. So what does that mean? So the first cone, so let's look at these cones a little bit. I know this sounds perhaps a little bit abstract, but of course, I mean, this stuff is well known. So the L infinity plus is just essentially bounded random variables that are non-negative, and C is the attainable claims, right? So attainable claims is essentially bounded random variables that I can, for which there exists an admissible strategy that sort of dominates them almost surely, right? And then the key thing here in this setup is that this closure is taken in the norm topology, right? In the strong topology, in the norm topology, L infinity topology, so topology induced by the L infinity norm. Okay? So why is that so important? Well, it's important because it has economic ramifications, right? It has economic ramifications, which essentially means that if this condition is violated, then we can set up a countable construction that gets me as close as I want to actually making money without any risk. And so here's the basic idea, as you've, I'm sure, seen before, right? So if I take G, which is sort of non-trivial element in that intersection, that's fine. Then I can find a sequence of attainable claims that converges to G in this essential supremum topology, right? And therefore, for each, also for each GN, I have an attainable a trading strategy which sort of is larger than my GN for every N. And then, because this GN converges to G in the norm topology, then the negative part of G, and you remember G is non-negative, you see, G is non-negative, the negative part of G will sort of vanish uniformly on the probability space. And therefore, these H and S's will have the same property. In other words, this limit will hold, you see. This is precisely the risk of the trading strategy H and. This risk will vanish uniformly. So anything that's below zero will sort of go up. Okay, so that sort of the economic interpretation is an important concept, and of course its characterization is the famous Delbani-Shahrmann theorems, right? They tell us that in the general setting, for general semi-Martin ALS, it satisfies NFLVR if and only if there exists an equivalent sigma-Martingale measure for S. Now, of course, I mean, it's very general. So we are going to look at much more specialized situations where S is going to be non-negative, in which case NFLVR holds if and only if there exists a sort of local, equivalent local Martingale measure for S. So that's that. Right. Now, I mentioned earlier this, admissibility, right? So we want to get rid of this admissibility and this admissibility of trading strategies, right? You don't want to have these trading strategies which are sort of, you can't short, really. That doesn't sound like a good idea, but can you define the concept of arbitrage that does this? And it's this generalized arbitrage that sort of manages to get around that at, of course, some cost, which I will try to explain in the next few minutes. Okay. So what happens? Now here, the market is a non-negative semi-martingale, and we allow predictable trading strategies which are simple, right? So we just trade infinitely many times, the sequence of increased sequence of stopping times in a predictable way, of course, HK minus 1 is a measurable function with respect to this sigma algebra. Right? So I trade in this predictable way, but I don't assume that this is the naive stochastic integral is bounded from below. I trade finitely many times, no problem. This doubling strategy will not happen because I only have finitely, I'm putting only finitely many trades. And then the art is, of course, in defining attainable claims in a correct way. And this is the way that these things are defined. Let's not go into that right now. But the definition of the model, the definition of non-generalized arbitrage in such a non-negative, for such a non-negative semi-Martingale model, is that, again, similar to before, right? We have two cones, L infinity plus, the one we discussed earlier, and this C closed in some topology is sort of trivial. And the topology that we need to use in this case is the weak star topology. Weak star topology. So, I mean, yeah, if this may look even less appealing than before, and in some sense it is, because in order to exploit this kind of arbitrage in a model, what you get, what you know exists, is sort of a generalized sequence, so a net of these strategies that will lead to some potential that will converge in this in the generalized sense, will converge to the to something that, that will actually make you money, intuitively speaking, of course. This weak star topology is a topology which is sort of on L infinity, which is generated by a family of seminorms. The seminorms come out of the bounded linear functionals that correspond to the L1 functions on the probability space. I mean, this depends on the probability measure, of course, very strongly. I mean, if you change the measure, you get a different topology. It's important that, I mean, then the measure, of course, here, I didn't write it, but this L1 of P, and P is the original law of S, right? That's an important thing. Okay, so now, of course, this generalized arbitrage is not working. Right. Sure. Yeah. Yes. So, yes, I can't motivate it in the time I have, unfortunately. And of course, yes, I mean, it is important. You see, this condition is very close to no free lunch condition, right? No free lunch looks exactly like this, except that there is no numerator, right? So you divide by some constant plus what you can get out of the market. And this turns out to be something that sort of has the same problems as no free lunch, in that you don't get a nice countable sequence of things converging to your arbitrage thing. But what it does have is it has a very elegant mathematical characterization. You see, no generalized arbitrage exists if and only if there exists an equivalent Martingale measure for the original semi-Martingale. And no generalized arbitrage is satisfied on an infinite time horizon if and only if there is an equivalent measure under which S is a uniformly integrable Martingale. Mm-hmm. Oh, of course, what I wrote down here are the famous results of Durban and Schachermeier in this case of non-negative continuous semi-Martingale. See, I'm sort of reducing the size of models I'm looking at as I go along because I need to get to this one-dimensional diffusions which will satisfy all these things. And of course, you see, this is kind of nice. From these characterization theorems, you can see immediately that NGA implies NSLVR. Right, because the characterization tells you this. Right? The characterization tells you this. So now you could say, okay, fine. What's this talk about, right? I mean, there is characterization right here. What are we going to say? And of course, this is the case, and this is a valid point. However, I mean, everything here is very general, right? Everything is very general. I'm talking about saying Martingale. I'm talking about equivalent Martingale measures. It's not clear how actually one can check whether such things exist for concrete models. And in order to shed light on, you know, what these arbitrage or no arbitrage restrictions actually mean, one has to have good examples. You need to see examples, how these examples behave and how they interact. And as you will see, in the case of one-dimensional diffusions, there is already very rich structure of interaction between these concepts of arbitrage. And that's somehow the point of this talk. Okay. Yes. Yeah, no, I mean, so this is just so that I can state nicely these theorems, right? And of course, this is not to say that these concepts are not defined for general semi-Martingales. They are defined for general semi-Martingales, but I will in any case have to restrict to continuous semi-Martingales because I'll be looking at one-dimensional diffusion. Oh, yeah. Of course. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, Mike. That's right. No. You're just trading finitely many times. You need to be predictable. You're trading with respect to f tau k minus 1, and that's it, right? That's the whole point of. I mean, that's why they somehow started thinking about this. But you don't have economic interpretation. You don't have countable construction. Okay. So now we get to the sort of class of processes I really want to consider, right? And I want to study these questions in. So I take y to be a discounted asset price process which satisfies this one-dimensional SDE. I take my bond, of course, price to be equal to 1. The solution of this SDE is on this non-negative real line, right? It starts somewhere in there. And now I want to know that these such models exist. Excuse me. Now, of course, what comes into this picture through these conditions A, B, and C is this beautiful Engelbert-Schmidt theory, right? So we know that under very weak assumptions on mu and sigma, so mu and sigma in this case are Borel measurable and satisfy these local integrability conditions, right? There exists a unique, weak, possibly explosive solution of this SDE, you see. So this is almost, I mean, it's almost nothing, right? So and this is precisely the result of Engelbert-Schmidt theory, and these first three conditions are precisely in this setting, right? And now they guarantee that there is going to be a unique weak solution. Now, if you know a little bit about Engelbert-Schmidt theory, you will immediately recognize that this condition C allows me, you know, this local integrability, I should say, right, is something that around every point in the interior of the domain, so in any strictly positive number, there's a small neighborhood over which the thing is integrable, right? So if this coefficient is continuous, for example, this immediately holds, right? If they're locally bounded away from zero, that will immediately hold also. Right? This is essentially no restriction. And this condition C, I wanted to say, really allows me to define a scale function of my diffusion Y, right? Allows me to define a scale function, and then once I have the scale function, you see, that's how the Engelbert-Schmidt proof goes. Right. And once I define the scale function, I apply it to Y, and then I get an SDE for a diffusion, which is a local martingale. Right? It's a local martingale, and then the second condition B, I use to sort of time change this local martingale and get it out of Brownian motion in sort of similar style as Dubin-Schwarz. Right. So that's how these things are constructed. But in any case, what's important for us is that I can write down these Borel measurable functions, satisfy these weak conditions, don't satisfy any conditions at all around the boundaries of this thing. There's no growth condition, anything like that. And I will get a solution. But the solution may be explosive. Now, I want to stay in the world of semi-martingales, right? So I don't want my solution to explode at plus infinity, right? That's not a good idea. It's not a semi-martingale. And also, I want this to be a stalk, right? I don't want it to go to infinity in finite time. That's not very realistic. So I have to add this one condition on this side, you see, why doesn't exit at infinity? Now, of course, you can say, oh, this is a difficult condition maybe to check, but of course, it's not really, because this is just Steller's test for explosions. Again, in terms of the what's it called, the scale function of this y, you can incorporate this thing, a similar kind of condition on some deterministic function of mu and sigma. That's very important. On the other side, I mean, it may exit at zero, and I allow it because stocks can go to zero, at which point I absorb, of course. I absorb because I don't want to introduce arbitrage in my model, right, in a silly way. So this is part of the definition of the model. And now the task is, you get NFL, I give you mu and sigma, and I would like you to give me characterization in terms of mu and sigma of whether NFLVR exists, NGA exists, or no relative arbitrage. I haven't described this yet, but I'll describe it later. I mean, it's not such a big deal. So NR, so this no relative arbitrage exists in this model. In terms of mu and sigma, some conditions I can actually check, not if, you know, by saying that if there exists an equivalent measure, then there is no NFLVR. I mean, that an NFLVR holds. That's sort of the thing that I would like to do. Okay. Right. So I wrote these conditions here. You see these conditions because I'll be sort of using them. I'll be using them throughout the talk. So I wrote them here. And we have, now in order to describe my characterization, deterministic characterization, right, I also have some additional conditions that need to hold, well, not need to hold, but these conditions will arise in my characterization, right? I mean, I will give you a characterization of NFLVR, and that will be some integrability condition on the coefficients, and these things will arise in there, right? So this is mu squared over sigma to the fourth is in L1 log j. Second condition is x mu squared of x divided by sigma to the fourth of x is in L1 log 0 plus 3 is x divided by sigma squared of x is not in L1 log of 0 plus. Okay. So these conditions is just something that will arise in the characterization. You see, note that, for example, this is something we assume so that to have a model, and this thing is stronger, right? This guy, 1, implies this. Okay. And this will be actually play an important part in this characterization thing. Okay. So here are the results I have, right? Here are the results. So we assume these A through D. So this gives us a model. This gives us one-dimensional diffusion model. And then the question, as I was saying earlier, right, we want to know whether in this diffusion model we have NFLVR on a finite time horizon. And the answer is, yes, we do, if and only if A or B hold, where A is 1 and 2, so these guys here on the board on the left, or B is 1 and 3, so, yeah, again, the board, plus Y doesn't exit at 0, right? But Y exiting at 0 is, again, a deterministic condition, of course, you know, because you can simply check. This is Feller's test for explosion, again, at 0 at this time, right? So these are deterministic conditions that tell me if and only if when NFLVR exists. See, this is kind of interesting because, you know, you drive your process with a Brownian motion and you write down the wrong coefficients and you may introduce free lunch with vanishing risk in your model. And this tells you precisely when this happens. Of course, results in this direction are not entirely new. So there's this paper by Durban and Shirakawa from 2002 where under more stringent conditions, they had this corollary, right? So what were the more stringent conditions that they had? They had two things. Y, the coefficients of Y were not general Borel functions, local integrability. They assumed some local boundedness away from 0, 1, and more importantly, in my view, they worked on the canonical setting. Okay, they worked on the canonical probability space, which essentially means that they worked with the canonical right continuous filtration generated by Y. Okay, you see, in this theorem, one thing that it says is that this NFLVR is in fact independent of the right continuous filtration on this model that we're dealing with. Any right continuous filtration will either all have NFLVR or not, because the conditions are deterministic in terms of mu sigma, right? There's nothing else in there, so there's nothing to do with the filtration. All we need is for the right continuous filtration underlying the model to be such that Y is adapted to it, right? Well, of course, in the Shirakawa case, because there wasn't a canonical probability space, they used the filtration generated. Well, of course, their methods were also very different. Okay, so that's the question of NFLVR at finite time. Now, you can ask the same question in infinite time, sure, why not, right? And the answer is here. It's 1 and 2, and S of infinity is infinity. So what's S? S is the scale function I mentioned earlier, this integral of mu over sigma squared, right? And, you know, this S has non-negative derivative, strictly positive derivative, in fact, so it's an increasing function. It'll have a limit at infinity. Now, if this limit at infinity is infinite, then this condition holds, of course, and this can be checked, again, it's in terms of mu and sigma. But this has a nice probabilistic interpretation also, right, this condition, because you know how it is. When you look at these one-dimensional diffusions, right, these diffusions, there's some rigidity going on. Either a diffusion oscillates on the whole probability space, or it tends to boundary points in finite or infinite time on the whole probability space. Now, if S of infinity is infinity, means that the diffusion doesn't oscillate, and it doesn't go to infinity neither in infinite nor in finite time. It means that all the trajectories either hit zero in finite time or extend to zero at infinite time. Okay? So this is what this means. I mean, of course, when you're using this theorem, you simply check whether this is the case or not, right, to know whether this NFLVR is there. Similarly, NGA, I was saying earlier, I mean, it was clear from these characterizations that it implies NFLVR, but in fact, it's an equivalent to NFLVR in this one-dimensional diffusion setting plus this condition here. And also, now, of course, NFLVR, we have deterministic criteria given by this theorem 1, right? So this is a deterministic criterion for NGA, right, for no generalized arbitrage. Now, proposition 5 says that there's always generalized arbitrage on an infinite time horizon because these diffusions will never have sort of equivalent measures such that the thing is a uniformly integrable marking. And this somehow also intuitively follows from this characterization that I was saying earlier, because either it oscillates, in which case it can't be uniformly integrable, or it converges to something silly, either 0 or infinity, right, which you can't close it with a sensible random variable. Okay, so that's that. Now, of course, I would love to say something about the proofs of these things, but there's absolutely no time for that because I would need another talk, certainly. But I made this slide in sort of a feeble hope that this will shed some light, but let's see. Let's try. You see, so this slide is really about what kind of questions one needs to consider to prove these things, okay? Of course, it's all about changing measures, It's all about changing measure and when measure equivalent, etc. Right? So you really need to think about Gibbs Sarnoff type, sort of local exponential, stochastic exponentials, right, of certain local martingales. So if you consider a general Borel measurable function B, such that this thing is satisfied, this deterministic condition is satisfied, local integrability of B squared over sigma squared. This, it turns out, via the occupation times formula, is equivalent to this quadratic variation being finite before zeta. Zeta is the first time my diffusion hits zero. Okay? This is equivalent. Of course, this needs it requires some work, but it's actually equivalent to this probabilistic statement. And when this is finite, I'm very welcome to define, or anybody is really, to define this stochastic integral here and look at the stochastic exponential z of this local martingale. Also, you see, what happens once this zero is hit? Well, so Roger Lee was saying on Monday, right, that you know, if you have a non-negative local martingale, that you can write it always as a geometric Brownian motion, which is a martingale time change, right? And the time change is precisely this quadratic variation, right? So in the case my process hits zero at some point zeta and the quadratic variation is infinite, then this process will tend to zero naturally, right? Why is that? Because it's just a reparametrization of geometric Brownian motion, which is a martingale, which tends to zero as t goes to zero. That's sort of a well-known fact. And therefore, I'm just going down this path very quickly, and finite time I get there, and then I simply define it continuously from that point on. Okay. So now the question that one needs to answer is, when is Z a martingale? Also, an important thing, because if it's a martingale, I can start thinking about changing measure, for example, right, for some specific choice of B. Another thing to think about, really, one needs to characterize if one wants sort of this if and only if statement, is when is this Zt strictly positive, P almost surely, you see, because this kind of guy, as you can see, right, this thing can become negative, can become zero, the stochastic exponential, right, if the quadratic variation of the local martingale, I'm taking the stochastic exponential law of tends to infinity in finite time, this can be zero. So is this strictly positive, P almost surely, so characterize this. Then, of course, also another thing is, you know, you want to apply this, these sort of answers to questions 1 and 2 to z, which is given by minus mu over sigma squared. And this minus mu over sigma squared, you see, it doesn't satisfy, you see, this is what it satisfies. But it's not going to satisfy, if I take this mu over sigma squared instead of this b, it's not going to satisfy this condition, right? So I can't even build this thing necessarily in my model. Yeah, because you remember I said that you need to have this in order to actually define the stochastic exponential, to define the local martingale. Okay, maybe this is a little bit too much. I don't know. Anyway, so, and of course, last but not least, you know, we know from the work of Durbin Shahrman, right, that equivalent local martingale measures may exist, but the actual Radon-Nikodym densities are not given by stochastic exponentials of this form. Right? So you need to worry about that also. So these are the kind of things that go into this. Okay, so I've got now 10 minutes roughly, yeah? I will try to say a word or two about this relative arbitrage stuff. Relative arbitrage. Okay. So this is another concept of arbitrage that one can think about. Comes up in the context of stochastic portfolio theory, right? So that's the thing that sort of started by Fernholz, and then Karatas also is now working on it. They have been working on it for years, really. So they are really concerned with, you know, the problem of investing over long horizons, right? Investing in the stock market over long horizons. They need to be able to say, they would like to say, you know, they're running a hedge fund, and they want to say to the customers, you know, we've outperformed the index over a 10-year period consistently. They don't really care about NFLVR in the market. They don't care about outperforming the bond. You see, free lunch at vanishing risk can be sort of rephrased in terms of existence of a trading strategy which outperforms a bond. Okay? But they don't care about outperforming a bond because no investor will say, you know, show me your sort of record of outperforming the bond market. You know, what you need to say is really I've outperformed consistently the S&P 500 over the last 15 years. So, naturally, this concept of relative arbitrage sort of looks at first sight, similar to no arbitrage constraints that we're sort of more familiar with and more used to. But in fact, as you will see on the next few slides, there is quite a lot of difference even in the case of one-dimensional diffusion process. Right? But in any case, the way to think about this, right, if you're tired and you can't really absorb this definition now, I mean, it's not that terribly complicated, but if you haven't seen it, maybe it's a bit much. But the way to think about it is, really, in this case of one-dimensional models, right, we're trying to outperform the market, and this is what this thing is saying, right? There exists relative arbitrage if I can start at time zero where the market is, and at time capital T, I outperform it almost surely with this thing being strictly positive, right? And now note that, of course, outperforming the market in this way does not necessarily give rise to an arbitrage strategy, right? And this goes back to this stuff that I was saying about admissible strategies, you see. Because in order to incorporate, you see, because one could say simply, right, I'll take the same position as I'm taking in V minus one stock, right? But this minus one stock is not a good idea, because that may not be admissible, you see. This is excluded by admissibility. You know, I was moaning earlier about how it's not good to have sort of minus one stock if you have models that are sort of unbounded from above, which most models are, really. So this is not necessarily, these two things are, of course, not equivalent. Now, another thing to say here is that this relative arbitrage thing, right, this is all defined in the context of eta processes, right? The context of eta process, of course, perhaps eta guy, right? So eta process person. So what they do is they, yes? Yes, yes. Yes.
Which would be that V little t is bigger than y little t basically.
Yes.
And then the process that you mentioned is admissible because, right, in
yes. Yes, yes, okay. So, of course, this is just, I'm just trying to motivate why they wrote down this thing, right? Of course, how exactly they used the models, and, I mean, of course, they built a whole theory about it, right? What needs to be done and what, so their point is, also, if this kind of condition is not satisfied, they want to find a candidate strategy, they're not happy with the fact that, some existence result. Right, but somehow this is just a very basic definition, really stripped down to the bone, because I'm really looking at this in for what they would concern an uninteresting case, because I'm interested in existence of sort of whether this condition is satisfied in one-dimensional diffusion world, right? While they are interested in sort of investing in the whole universe of all stocks, you see. So yes, I mean, I take your point, but it's not. This is the condition that they look at in the models, and this is the condition that I can characterize, right? And I'm just asking the question of whether this condition, how it relates to the NFLVR, right? That's what I want to ask. But I would like to say something about these sort of we change. You see, okay, so I was saying this V has to be strictly positive, right? V has to be strictly positive and never go to infinity, and so does Y. And in order to assure that this is the case in my diffusion model, I need to assume this slightly more stringent condition C prime instead of this C. You see, the C prime is mu squared over sigma to the 4 local integrable. Again, I mean, this is quite weak, but it is stronger than this, right? It's certainly stronger than this. So the C prime implies C. And also, I want to assume that Y exits neither at zero nor at infinity, because they don't allow their market to go to zero, right? So I don't allow my diffusion to go to zero either. And this is, again, just another addition of a Feller explosion at zero, Feller exit at zero, something like that. Okay. So so that's that. Of course, this condition here, why did we introduce this condition? Well, because in the Ito process world, this is equivalent to some quadratic variation being finite or something, which is something that they assume in their theory, right? So we really want to be in the setting of their theory to show that, how these things relate to the rest of the sort of no arbitrage constraints, the no arbitrage concept. And so what is our setup now, right? Our setup is as before. So we have this diffusion with these measurable coefficients that satisfy A, B, C prime, and D prime, where C prime and D prime are slightly stronger than C and D. And now we can define, you see, because I have no exit at zero of my diffusion, I can define this quadratic variation stays finite, as I was saying earlier, right? So I can define this process for all T without any zetas, right, without any having to worry about explosions, and it's easy to see that this Z bar times Y is a local martingale. This is just application of Itô's formula. Okay? And then it turns out that this no relative arbitrage definition is equivalent to this Z bar Y being a martingale. Okay? It's equivalent. Now, this is something that was already, of course, noted by Fernholz and Karatas. However, in our case, and they, of course, formulated this for some Z bar where the integrand was an Itô process. But for us, in order to be able to characterize no relative arbitrage, we needed to know that this Itô process is precisely, the integrand is precisely of this form, mu over sigma of y at time u. Right? We need to prove that, and of course, this follows from some representation theorem. Some work needs to go into this, right? And in fact, it turns out that in this one-dimensional diffusion setting, no relative arbitrage is equivalent to this Z bar Y being a martingale. And then once you know this, then you can get deterministic characterization, right? And it turns out that under these conditions A, B, C prime, and D prime, right, which gives us the model, which doesn't explode neither at zero nor at infinity, this is equivalent to this function being not being locally integrable at infinity. So what this really means is that, you know, the integral from some large constant onwards is always going to be infinite, right, for any large constant. That's what it means for this function. And the way to prove this, of course, is by really doing this calculation, which I mentioned earlier, right? So you do Itô's lemma on this Z bar Y, and you see that it's really of this form, where B is given in terms of sigma and mu in this way. And this means that Z bar Y is in fact a stochastic exponential of this local martingale, of this stochastic integral. Right? And then for these stochastic integrals, we know how to characterize whether they're martingales or not. Okay. That's good. So now this is the last slide, I think. Yeah. Where we somehow have fun now with these conditions. We worked, and now we have the conditions, and now we can have some fun and show that how these things sort of relate to each other. So one thing to note is that you see the theorems that I showed you now under these more stringent conditions, C bar, so when this mu squared over sigma to the fourth is locally integrable, and y explodes neither at zero nor at infinity, these characterizations become simpler, right? In particular, they stop depending on mu. Okay? It doesn't depend on mu. There is no more mu that features here, right? You remember, mu is the diffusion coefficient of my the drift coefficient of my diffusion. Right? They stop depending on mu, so that's good or not. In any case, I mean, these are the conditions. And now, once you have these conditions, you can, as I was saying, I mean, you can really play around, and you see immediately from these conditions that no generalized arbitrage condition is equivalent in this one-dimensional diffusion setting to NFLVR and no relative arbitrage. And furthermore, one can see, simply by playing around with these functions and choosing them in a very simple way, that NFLVR and NRA, so no relative arbitrage, are in general position. So what does that mean? Well, it means that, for example, in the Black-Scholes model, I can outperform neither the stock nor the bond by trading in an admissible way. In this model, I can outperform the stock but not outperform the bond by trading in an admissible way. In this model, I can outperform the bond but not the stock in admissible by trading in an admissible way. And in this model, I can outperform both things. Okay? That's just what comes out. Okay, I think I'll stop here. Thank you very much. Ah, yeah.